Greetings, beloved family. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is but one God. Welcome to the Black Agenda Conversation. I am Brother David Muhammad, and over the next hour or so, we'll be sharing some powerful and important information with you. As we are every Wednesday evening at this time, and today we're looking at the issue of human rights violations during this pandemic in particular. Because this is an issue that slowly but surely has been worsening on a day-to-day basis, and we have, again, slowly but surely, been becoming accustomed to a new kind of normal that is not the same kind of normal as everyone else, with the changes in regards to the pandemic and the infrastructure and the restrictions and the lockdown and the social isolation and distancing, etc. But this is a new normal that violates some age-old principles regarding our riots, our rights, our human rights, our civil rights. And it has come to a point where denial of human rights has almost become invisible, something that we would expect to happen to us. And right now, today again, marks another very significant day in the history of us as a Caribbean people, with yet again another major protest against the COVID-19 vaccines, which this time took place in Jamaica. In Jamaica today, there was a planned march, and then the head of the police force issued a public statement just the day before the march saying that no permission has been given. The citizens do not have the right to come out, and we, the police, will deal with or take action if citizens do. And the people took a decision that while there may be concern about what might happen to them if they defy the orders of the police, they recognize at the same time that their rights and status as citizens was even greater and more important to defend than their fear of the police or their concern or caution as to what might happen to them. Because even though you go and you're arrested or challenged by the police officers, then you have an issue to face. But if rights that you know for sure that you have are not taken seriously enough, then you're doing an injustice not only to yourselves, but also to the following generations that are to come in the future. And the people in Jamaica, peacefully cooperating with respect for life and limb and property and not causing obstructions on the street, they came out in their numbers today to demonstrate against being forced to take a COVID-19. These marches and protests and mass gatherings and social movements are not against the vaccine, and they are being wrongly labeled anti-vaxxing campaigns and marches and protests. They are not that. And many of the people who are standing up for this particular cause deeply resent being called anti-vaxxers. But they are protesting against the notion that a government can force a people into taking a medication or into scientific or medical treatment or experimentation against their will. And today in Jamaica, a couple weeks back in Barbados, last week also in Guyana, the people have come out by their hundreds, by their thousands, to lift their voices in unison against being forced to take any kind of medicine or vaccine or injection against their will that they're being forced to. And in addition to this, the manner in which the information is being treated with is also an issue for major concern. Now, what I want to add to the equation this evening on the Black Agenda is the fact that we as people of African descent should be additionally sensitive to the fact that outside of a pandemic, even before all of this, historically, we have had to fight for human rights, fight for civil rights, but most people perceive that struggle as a fight for equal rights. Because in all of these societies, we have consistently witnessed that it is as if we are the least favored sons, even though we play a major part in the electing of governments, in the mass vote bank supporting segment of the population that engage in the electoral process to get political parties to become governments. And even though our loyalty in that particular role has been second to none, as far as our status as citizens is concerned, we have been last. And this is why we asked the question a few weeks ago. How is it that governments all over have showed and proved historically that they are least concerned about Black people? We have the worst roads in our communities, the poorest service, the most negligent political representation. We're subject to high food prices, low minimum wage, inadequate amenities, water supply being interrupted, electricity supply being interrupted. How is it that Black people are always the victims of a kind of political electoral assassination on a population in a community, but when it comes to taking the vaccine, we're first up? There's the most interest, there's the most concern, there's the most care. How come? Especially when you've already established a consistent pattern of not caring about Black people. And now it's fried chicken to get a vaccine, burgers and fries to get a vaccine, giving you a pair of shoes to get a vaccine. A bank, they say they're giving away $5,000 in prizes for a period of time to get a vaccine. Win a car to get a vaccine. So it's just not adding up. It is just not, and doesn't appear to be sincere. And so we have to look at this. So we're on facebook.com/Black Agenda Project. I want you to please share this message, share this live presentation with your friends and family members and colleagues and your loved ones. We're about to share some very important information. And also, good evening to all of our people in the city of Philadelphia. We are running on the Time for an Awakening online radio station, again with the Black Radio Talk Network in the United States. So greetings and welcome to everyone. Now, Malcolm X, in The Ballot or the Bullet, a 1964 presentation that he did, was challenged on whether or not we, in our present state of consciousness, should become part of the civil rights struggle, or whether we should take a human rights approach to dealing with the matter of our status and our citizenship and our respect regarding how we're treated by the political class, etc. And while there, of course, was this prevailing view that Black people need to fight for civil rights, and that in our communities, our involvement in the political process, especially on the level of local government, can help realign our position as being the recipient of rights, Malcolm X said, no, our fight is not for civil rights. Our fight as Black people is for human rights. because it is the denial of the human rights of African people and the dehumanization of us, and not just an overnight single incident, but a long-term, ongoing, consistent, and continuous dehumanization process that has been intergenerational as well as intragenerational. Malcolm X said that that has been a major part of who we are and how we have been socialized. So as people of African descent, we have grown up under a psychology where we're programmed and trained to believe that we deserve less. And it is right for us to occupy a position of second or third class citizenship. And that we need to be grateful for any kind of display of generosity from the state. It is like a favor that you're supposed to bow down in gratitude for, rather than a right that you're duty bound to have. And we have even been bringing up our children in this way, to believe that when it comes to us, anything that we receive, we're supposed to bow down and thank the government for. Meanwhile, on the other hand, we look at the privilege that all other ethnic groups receive, especially in Caribbean societies, in spite of the fact that we have black faces in government, there's still white privilege and Syrian privilege and Chinese privilege. And we, many of us who become involved in the political process, even defend that right for others. That is such damage. When you accept being treated like a third-class citizen, but you're fighting for first-class citizenship rights for others, that's a travesty. So Malcolm X said, we can never get civil rights until our human rights are first restored. We will never be recognized as citizens until we are first recognized as humans. And this world that is currently changing so rapidly, and we're looking at the lockdown and all of the pandemic rules and legislation being passed by different governments and decisions being made to put in new impositions every day. But the real change that is taking place is on the level of denial of freedom of thought, suppression of consciousness, and restriction of critical thinking. So all they have to do is control your mind, and then your actions will follow. Carter G. Woodson said that he who controls the diameter of your learning experience controls the circumference of your activity. And if you can control what a man will think, you can control what that man will do. And when it comes to black people in marginalized ghetto communities, they throw in a white superiority / black inferiority thinking that sets us in motion to be in a perpetual state of self-destruction. All of that is a byproduct of the self-hatred that came out of the Willie Lynch syndrome. And so now you just teach us to hate ourselves and then put us in a community and put a fence around it, and the self-destruction process starts because the self-hatred reality continues. So, remember, the United Nations General Assembly, by its resolution 68/237 of the 23rd of December 2013, proclaimed the International Decade for People of African Descent, commencing on January 1st, 2015, and ending on December 31st, 2024, with the theme, People of African Descent, Recognition, Justice, and Development. The main objective of this International Decade for People of African Descent is to promote respect, protection, and fulfillment of all human rights and fundamental freedoms for people of African descent as recognized in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. they recognized that it's by the fact that we were robbed of our humanity as African people that this permits and facilitates a chain reaction of bad experiences with state political authority, and our acceptance of it. And now you merge all of these new restrictions in this lockdown with the fact that we were already on the tail end of justice from the state because of our blackness, and then you have this recipe for chaos. So in Trinidad, we have been hearing of various cases of persons being arrested, handcuffed, thrown in jail for allegedly breaking the curfew. But at the same time, the white people and the Syrians could have their mass gatherings, their weddings, their poolside parties, and no one even touched them. But we have 3 reports so far of black people in their own yard, on their own property, right outside their own house, but within their own space, and police cars driving by, seeing you there in your own yard. One brother was washing his car in his own yard, behind his own gate and fence, and he was arrested for breaking the curfew. And now we have an even more horrific case of one of Trinidad and Tobago's national sporting heroes, one of the Soca Warriors, the football players that went to the 2006 World Cup in Germany, Cornell Glenn, who was a victim of this. Now, I'm going to read Cornell Glenn's statement, which was posted on social media, which is now receiving attention, and we expect something to come out of this case. Please continue to share this with our people. So this happened apparently last week, Thursday, just about 6 days ago. This is the statement from Cornell Glenn, who, member of the national football team of Trinidad and Tobago, traveled to several dozens of countries all over the world, worked as a professional in so many different countries all over the world, who is a recipient of our second highest category of national award, the Chaconia Medal Gold, and a young inspiration, someone who's been a mentor and a positive role model for so many other young African males. This is Cornell Glenn's experience. He says, last night, which was Thursday night, at around 9:30 p.m., he says, I was arrested for breach of curfew while I was taking out some boxes from my car, which was parked in my yard. The officer told me, this is not my yard, shaking my head. He says, I was physically and verbally assaulted. My parents, both over the age of 70 years, were also physically and verbally assaulted. My mother ended up in the hospital this morning due to the physical assault. My family members were beaten and tased in the yard of our private residence, which the officers made a joke about in the van. Cornell Glenn continues, the handcuffs were put on me so tight that I immediately started losing feeling in my fingers and left arm. I was taken to the Carinage police station sometime between 10 and 11 p.m. in just the short pants that I was wearing, and I was barefooted and bareback. They put me in a cold concrete cell. I asked four officers for a phone call. I was only offered a call around 2 a.m., which I declined until later in the morning. I was not offered anything to eat nor drink until 12:45 this afternoon. That's the next day. Although a meal was dropped for me at 7 a.m., he says, I was not given a mask to wear, even when I was moved to different parts of the station. I requested a face mask multiple times. Due to this, I was advised to self-isolate for 5 to 7 days because God alone knows who else was in those cells. So I will be unable to open my business for a week. He's also a restaurant owner. Then he laments, I have given so much to this country. Never once thought my most hurtful, embarrassing, and demeaning day in my life would ever happen right at home in my own yard. Then he says, I will speak on further on this issue at a later date. Now again, Cornell Glenn is a national sporting hero of Trinidad and Tobago, one of the 24 footballers who were awarded a $1 million prize in the Chaconia Medal Gold in 2006 after representing Trinidad and Tobago on the world stage with probably, to this day, the only event that has brought all of Trinidad and Tobago together. Not even independence, because on Independence Day you had Dr. Rudinath Kapildeo and the DLP party who took a position opposing independence because they were concerned about what would happen to the Indian community if a quote-unquote black government would come in. As a matter of fact, Dr. Rudinath Kapildeo in his independence speech in 1962 warned of a... And look at the irony of this. Wow. Dr. Kapildeo, who was basically the political representative of the East Indian community in Trinidad, expressed fear that the police in Trinidad could turn out to be, he used the term, Praetorian Guard in reference to the racist white South African police during apartheid against the Indian community. This is 1962. Who would have dreamed that years later it would be black people who would be the number one victims of the brutality of a police force? And this is a consistent pattern that you see all over the world, whether it is police brutality and extrajudicial killings of black youth in Trinidad and Tobago or Jamaica or Guyana or all across the United States. It is the same wherever you go. So now, there have been other cases of this, but of course, Cornell Glenn being someone who is well known, it started to get more attention. But how is it again? Because this is probably a dimension that many of us are not thinking in. Yes, we're all concerned about the pandemic and the restrictions and the lockdown and the social isolation and the distancing. But don't ever forget that before we even knew the words coronavirus or COVID-19, we as African people were already in a struggle for our human rights in these societies. And now we are victims of a double impact. And to think that the supposed motive behind arresting someone for breaking the COVID-19 restrictions or the state of emergency or the curfew, the motive behind it, the reasoning behind it, is that you're posing a threat to the health of other people. Here a man is out in his own space, late in the night, fresh air all around. He's alone, but he's arrested, barefoot, bareback, placed in handcuffs, put in a cell. And again, don't forget, some of you call it racism, and why are you talking about racism as a pandemic? But you're a fool if you don't think that way, because while Cornell Glenn and so many other poor black people are being denied of their human rights under an already existing pandemic, you still have the boldness of the Syrian community, largely, who have a heavier influence over the government than you will ever have, just scotch-free doing what they want under the pandemic and it never being brought to justice. So it is within our own minds that we psychologically perpetuate a subtle inferiority complex by accepting a third-class position for ourselves while fighting for a first-class position for others. That has been our new normal. And that is something that I am cautioning you to be aware of. And now, it's come to the point where you actually have to explain why you as a citizen have a right to refuse a vaccine. And again, this is not so much about an injection on its own, but it is about the fact that in all of these societies, we have constitutions that were established through a process, that each of us as Caribbean nations are proud of our status of independence. In Trinidad and Tobago, who will be celebrating Republic Day this weekend. Remember, a republic is a status of democracy that even further embellishes the fact that the people are in control. Because in truth and in fact, you have four different kinds of government. You have an autocracy, which is one man in control. Then you have an aristocracy, where you have one group in control. Then you have a democracy, which is what we're supposed to be in part, which is defined by government of the people, for the people, and by the people, and it's one man, one vote. And then a wise man once said, when a people are afraid of their government, it is called tyranny. But when a government is afraid of the people, that is called democracy. And that taxation without representation is also tyranny. And under the kind of stranglehold of economic oppression, and now under the looming threat of a new property tax being introduced. And listen, people are discussing the property tax. To me, if you think about it, it shouldn't even be much of a discussion. You know why? Because the same politicians today who are saying, yes, we're going to bring back this property tax and we're going to charge you $5,000 if you don't file papers in time and all of that, there are two sets of videos, one from 2009 and one from 2015, where the same people who are bringing the property tax today, just a few years ago, said, no, we're not bringing any property tax. And if anyone says that our government coming back into power is going to reintroduce the property tax, then that's a bold-faced lie and all of that. How is it that we cannot hold these politicians accountable for what they say and do or don't do? And this now shines the spotlight back on us as a community. Because the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that politics without economics is symbol without substance. And if your political participation has no hope of economic empowerment for you, then you have to ask yourself the question, why are you voting? Because if we are locked in a system where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and instead of it getting better, it's getting worse because it's now a standard policy, and you as a poor person are participating in an election to get someone in who is going to make rich people richer and poor people poorer, then you have to be accountable to your own family as to why you would have abandoned the idea of, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, uniting, combining our strengths and building a black economy. That is our responsibility, beloved. So people are debating the pros and the cons about the property tax, but what about the issue of keeping your word to the masses? And again, don't ever forget the oppression that already existed prior to all of this. So, I want us to remain focused on the idea, though, of our human rights. Earl C. Graves said, "Now more than ever, Africans in the diaspora have the leadership and collective wealth that, if properly leveraged, can give us the clout to attack racism on all fronts. Meanwhile, racism is more insidious than ever, and we have not truly come together as we have in the past to fight it. Yes, we had all of these grand moments in past times that went down as historical occasions in us fighting for our rights. But now, institutionalized racism against African people is just as evident as the blatant racism was back then. But back then, the fight against it was stronger. But now, in the 21st century, it is being met with a kind of sleep and a complicity and a defense of the same system that is keeping us down. National committees on reparations were being established in the Caribbean up to 2014, and attention was given to the legal process of these committees and reference to the United Nations General Assembly, which adopted Resolution 60/147, Basic Principles and Guidelines on the Right to a Remedy and Reparation for the Victims of Gross Violation of International Human Rights Laws and Serious Violations of International Humanitarian Law in March 2006, which called on states to promote respect of its contents. It is generally understood across the board that African people's fight for human rights is like a springboard platform. But it's something that we're not even seeing as missing. The United Nations Human Rights Committee states that the principle of equality sometimes requires states, parties, to take affirmative action in order to diminish or eliminate conditions which cause or help to perpetuate discrimination prohibited by the covenant. As long as such action is needed to correct discrimination, it is a case of legitimate differentiation under the covenant. So now, the question of affirmative action has come up again because there have been certain historical injustices that have been set in motion, in particular when it comes to land ownership and land distribution, that have never been corrected, that some kind of affirmative action must be considered. And then with the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown, instead of going in the direction towards the achievement of some of these aims, goals, and objectives, we are instead going in the opposite direction, which we have to caution ourselves from. Let me just make a quick point about affirmative action here. This is a policy of providing special opportunities for and favoring members of a disadvantaged group who suffer from discrimination. Its policies vary from region to region. For example, some countries use a quota system whereby a certain percentage of jobs or school vacancies must be set aside for members of a certain group. In some other regions, specific quotas do not exist, but instead, members of minorities are given preference in selection processes. The term affirmative action was first used in the United States in Executive Order 10925 and was signed by President John F. Kennedy on March 6, 1961. It was used to promote actions that achieve non-discrimination. In 1965, President Lyndon Baines Johnson issued Executive Order 11246, which required government employees to take affirmative action to hire without regard to race, religion, and national origin. It is intended to promote equal access of opportunities to privileged and non-privileged groups within a population. The stated justification for affirmative action by its proponents is that it helps to compensate for past discrimination, persecution, or exploitation by the ruling class of a culture and to address existing discrimination. This, beloved, is where we have fallen asleep. Because now we're talking about Caribbean societies, and we're not so much talking about jobs. We're talking about land. We're talking about intergenerational and intragenerational transfer of wealth. We're talking about inheritance by law. We're talking about the fact that African people's blood, sweat, and tears built all of these Caribbean societies. But as soon as slavery was abolished, foreign white people came into these countries and got free land and reparations for losing their property, which was the Africans that they owned. But from that day to now, we are still with our cap in hand, lining up, waiting for some kind of justice, and thinking that we're going to get it by voting. But when we do vote with all of our unrealistic hope and expectations, we only once again go around through a revolving door and come right back into the line, cap in hand, while all of the same descendants of the white slave masters who benefited from both slavery itself and from the emancipation and abolition of slavery, they are continuing to get more wealth and power, while we simply put different puppets on chairs in these parliaments and offices and senates and cabinets and judiciaries. When is our system going to take into consideration exactly what the same reference for affirmative action is here, which is, again, quote, the stated justification for affirmative action, and I want you to put this in a Caribbean context, by its proponents is that it helps to compensate for past discrimination, persecution, or exploitation by the ruling class of a culture and to address existing discrimination. The International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination stipulates in Article 2.2 that affirmative action programs may be required of countries that ratify the convention in order to rectify systemic discrimination. It states, however, that such programs shall in no case entail as a consequence the maintenance of unequal or separate rights for different racial groups after the objectives for which they were taken have been achieved. Affirmative action has wrongfully been described as reverse racism. But I want us to understand that it is not for employment to be hired, the right to fill vacancies. I'm talking about the root of wealth and the basis for independence, which is land. So in South Africa, which is probably one of the best examples that we could use, the Black Economic Empowerment Program, which was launched by the South African government to redress the inequalities after apartheid by reversing it and by giving certain previously disadvantaged groups economic privileges previously not available to them. It includes measures such as empowerment preference, skills development, ownership, management, socioeconomic development, and preferential procurement. Because again, you have all of these African contractors in these societies. You have all of these black-owned businesses that are overlooked in favor, again, for the local Caribbean white elite. And what makes it even more unfortunate is that we as poor black people who are getting some crumbs from the system defend the system and justify its right to continue to oppress us. And you have all of that, beloved, on the backdrop of this pandemic. And I would have said some weeks ago that this COVID-19 pandemic is like what you call a creeping kind of blanket over the consciousness of the general populations. Censorship, denial of freedom of speech, and suppressing of freedom of expression is something that the whole world will frown on under normal circumstances. But when it comes to talking about COVID-19, then it's the norm. Denial of human rights, denial of freedom of speech, and freedom of expression. And what was so ironic, and I'm not going to deal with this now, but we have the information probably during the week, is our beloved Trinidadian sister, artist and entertainer. And yes, we know that there are so many issues that could be discussed regarding Nicki Minaj. But based on what she said about a cousin of hers not wanting to take a vaccine due to some case of testicular swelling and all of that, look at how governments from different countries around the world weighed in on that conversation. Look at how many talking points there were, international talk shows, that captured this. But again, what was so ironic about it is when you go along with their information and the documents that they quote on the same vaccine adverse effects and reactions website, which lists all of the cases, the same ones that the authorities get their information from. It reports 50 cases of testicular issues. So you have to figure out at what time can you quote them and at what time can you not. Because again, we have to corroborate the evidence. This is what we're missing when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccines. There's no corroboration of facts, which means there's a bit of evidence over there, a bit of information over there, a report over here, some statistics over there, and we're treating all of them as separate, isolated incidents and events, but we're not connecting the dots and coming up with a bigger picture. Hence, the truth has less visibility and more obscurity. And meanwhile, the lies, misinformation, misrepresentation, and falsehoods are being disseminated with such official professionalism that is confusing the masses of the people. And it's a battle for the minds of the people to get them to stop thinking like intelligent beings and start thinking and behaving like sheep. So when you consider their logic, it's like COVID-19 is the only virus in the world where you can take all of the precautions for and then take an injection against, and after all of that, still get it from someone who does not have it. And the narrative is changing all the time. Get the vaccine so you won't get COVID. Then they take the vaccine and then they get COVID. So then the narrative becomes, well, take the vaccine so you won't get COVID as bad. Okay? And now, apparently, you can take the vaccine, you can still get infected with it, but you won't be hospitalized, but you're still at risk from someone else who... Let's corroborate some information here. September the 6th, 2021. Up to that date, Grenada, after a year and a half of the COVID-19 pandemic, had a total of 5 deaths. 18 months of the existence of COVID-19 in Grenada, only 5 deaths. Then overnight, going into September the 7th, they had more than double the full number of deaths from a year and a half before, with 7 deaths in one day. So they went from 5 deaths after a year and a half to 12 deaths in one night. It was on that same day that Dr. Avery Hines of Trinidad explained that the way these statistics are drawn up is that it's more a case of people who die with COVID as opposed to people who die from COVID. So, in other words, if you get a heart attack or you die from cancer or diabetes or stroke, but you tested positive for COVID-19, once you die from whatever else, they're listing you as a COVID-19 death. This is what they are saying. We're not making this up. This is the information that they're giving out in their press conferences, which was set on September the 6th. And there were even cases of persons drowning. And after they drown, they're doing a COVID test on the body. And if that person was found to be COVID positive, then that drowning would be listed as a death from COVID-19. It's like you get hit by a car and die. They're going to test your body for COVID-19. And if it says, yes, you're positive, then they'll probably put you down as dying from COVID-19. Now, how does that affect the truth of the statistics? And furthermore, we have to ask ourselves, at exactly what point did they begin changing the way that these statistics are being presented? Then September the 7th, TTT, Trinidad and Tobago Television, reported two fully vaccinated persons testing positive for the new Delta variant. Then September 12th is when the Nicki Minaj story broke out. Then September 15th, TV6 reported. Reported on September 19th, about September 15th, that the teenage son of a female pastor, Marva Peshier, took the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine and died within a day. He fell off his bed with a massive stroke and was bleeding from the brain. He had no known sicknesses. His distraught mother, as you would have probably seen on social media, made a painful appeal for justice for her son. Healthy teenage boy takes this COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine, dies within 48 hours, massive stroke, bleeding in the brain. And all the Minister of Health said about that today, however many days later it is that no one in Trinidad has died from a COVID vaccine. That's the only explanation. How disrespectful. Then you had the cases of pericarditis in children who were vaccinated. August 26th, a media report entitled TNT Schoolboy Diagnosed with Pericarditis After Receiving Pfizer Vaccine by J.D. Lancer on 868 Media refers to a child who was vaccinated on August 18th. Then, Guardian newspaper, August 26, 2021, reports second child has mild adverse reaction to Pfizer vaccine, pericarditis in brackets, but another child was hospitalized. Then, August 28th, 2021, Newsday newspaper reports CMO admits three fully vaccinated people die of COVID-19. Three. Now, each of these stories that I told you of here, from the August 26th, schoolboy diagnosed with pericarditis after receiving the Pfizer vaccine by J.D. Lancer. Then, second child with mild adverse reaction to Pfizer vaccine, pericarditis. Another child hospitalized. Then, August 28th, CMO admits three fully vaccinated people die from COVID-19. Then, September the 7th, TTT reporting two fully vaccinated persons tested positive for the new Delta variant. Then September 12th, the Nicki Minaj issue comes out where it's sensationalized globally. But when they find in the same report from the authorities that there were 50 cases of persons who took the COVID-19 vaccine and had issues, complaints with their testicles, that was never reported. So only the hype about it being said, but not the fact that there was some information somewhere that could be corroborated. And then September the 15th, now the son, teenage son of Miss Marva Peshe, who took the COVID-19 vaccine and died within the day. Those six or seven stories have all been dealt with in an isolated manner. They have not connected any of them. They have not drawn the dots between any of them so we can get the bigger picture. That's our responsibility as a wide awake, action-oriented, conscious media representation. So in other words, when one child dies after taking the COVID vaccine, and another child is hospitalized after taking the COVID-19 vaccine, and another two children suffer from pericarditis after taking the COVID-19 vaccine, and then people are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, and still getting infected, still being hospitalized, and still dying. All of those truths, because that is the truth. This is from their media sources. Why don't they pull all of those facts together and present it in one? Because I'm telling you, if the Minister of Health had dealt with all of those cases one by one, and on the same day as one of those, a United Kingdom Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization recommended a third dose of the COVID-19 vaccines, coming up with a theory that two is not enough. And when that was decided about the third dose, two FDA vaccine officials in the United States resigned over those discussions. When you put it all together, you get a different picture to what they're telling you. Now, our position has not been to try to force anyone or bully anyone or coerce anyone into making any decision. Our position has been, you need the information. And you need to be able to think for yourself. Corroborate the data. Examine the facts. Study the statistics. And ask yourself why there's such heavy silencing and censorship and restriction of freedom of speech and expression over this matter. And while there are all these restrictions on one hand, you also have to ask yourself, why is it that they're giving you fried chicken to take a vaccine, offering you a ticket to win a car to take the vaccine, giving away $5,000 in prizes every day up to a certain date, one of the banks, to take the COVID-19? When did they care so much about you before or since? So I remind us of the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan at the Criterion, his speech in Chicago, July the 4th, 2020. Long before any vaccines came out, Minister Farrakhan said, if they come up with a vaccine, be careful. Don't let them vaccinate you with their history of treachery through vaccines, through medication. Then he said, I say to the African presidents, do not take their medications. The minister said there are 14 therapies that are in the world today that we can use to fight against the COVID virus. You won't solve it. The scientists of the world won't solve it. And if you bring the vaccine and say you're going to bring your army to force us to take it, once you try to force us, that is a declaration of war on all of us. Minister Farrakhan concluded, you only have this one life. Fight like hell to keep it and fight like hell to destroy those whose heart and mind is to destroy you and take your life from you. Remember, beloved, all of those laws, those United Nations conventions and those covenants and restrictions. And again, I remind you of the United Nations ICCPR, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which was drafted by United Nations General Assembly Resolution 2200A on December the 16th, 1966, and it came into force on March 23rd, 1976, in accordance with Article 49 of the Covenant. It says that you cannot force citizens to take any kind of medical or scientific treatment or experimentation against their will. And it even points out that if there's a state of emergency, the government has the right to suspend your constitutional rights. But there are certain rights that they still cannot touch, which are freedom of thought, conscience, religion, freedom from retrospective law, the right to personhood, freedom from torture and slavery, and freedom from medical treatment without consent. And the United Nations came up with all of those laws after the Nuremberg trials, where those who were responsible for the Jewish Holocaust were brought up for crimes against humanity. And even though African people were the worst victims of crimes against humanity ever in all the annals of history, for four main reasons. One, the duration of the African Holocaust, over 300 years, while the Jewish Holocaust was 6 years, from 1939 to 1945. Two, the amount of people who were affected, close to 100 million African victims of genocide, while it was 6 million Jews. Three, the long-term intergenerational and intragenerational damage that was done to the social structure of the family, because black men were denied the right to be fathers and husbands in a household. We were denied the right to raise our children. And then four, the psychological damage that was done to us, which up to this day, there's evidence that we still have not yet recovered from. But I'm talking about this ICCPR, the United Nations General Assembly Resolution 2200, where they said you cannot force people into medical treatment. And you have a lot of these like modern day type of slave masters who think they own black people, who are the employees in their companies that they work for, who think they could just write up some piece of paper or threaten them with their job or force them to take a vaccine and threaten to send them home, and that they can own and control you and behave in this arrogant, haughty, high-handed manner. Well, those days are over, and those modern-day slave masters have to be shown that they do not have the right to treat anyone like that. So workers have to come together, combine their strengths, unite as a force, and demonstrate against them who are trying to pull that on you. And anyway, we're supposed to be uniting and pooling our resources as African people anyway, and not going after them for their jobs, because they're quick to change their mind as soon as it threatens their pockets. And our unity potentially threatens their pockets even more. But in spite of the fact that you have these United Nations covenants against taking or being forced to take medicine and medication and scientific medical treatment against your will, they will push you and push you. But if you push back and it reaches the courts, they have no leg to stand on at all. And Trinidad and Tobago signed and ratified the ICCPR on December the 21st, 1978, and it came into force on March 21st, 1979. And our industrial court has already ruled that employers cannot force their workers to take a COVID-19 vaccine in order to come to work or keep their jobs. That is simply not the case. And so I want to deal with the OSHA Act on another occasion, but let me just close with this. A landmark Supreme Court decision of 1896 reinforced the legislation of Jim Crow law in America, which remained the standard in United States law for the next century. Whites maintained full and complete superiority in all legal, political, economic, and social affairs. This is of major significance. Black business had no way of enforcing contracts, and all criminal acts against them were legally invisible under these laws. Wealth could simply be stolen from black people at any time and for any reason and by any white person with absolutely no recourse. One example of many is the Jewish-owned Moses Brothers Bank of Montgomery, Alabama, which had hundreds of black customers with deposits amounting to as much as $500,000. When it abruptly closed, that money was never returned. So by design, there was no incentive for blacks to keep, save, or invest money. Under such conditions, blacks prudently develop a spend-it-as-you-get-it culture that saves little and invests in nothing. Blacks work for low wages, and then on Friday, they return it to the white retailers, because the system severely punishes any other black fiscal behavior. So, how different is it for us? Not very different. So, beloved, this is where I leave it. But I want you to go to the website, www.blackagendaproject.com. Order the books. We have Black Studies, The Black Book Mind Revolution, and Knowledge is Power, and the new book, Black Youth at Risk, From Juvenile Delinquency to Criminal Gang Activity. Also visit our YouTube channel, youtube.com/blackagendaproject. Of course, this is facebook.com/blackagendaproject, instagram.com/blackagendaproject. Now also tiktok.com/blackagendaproject. And our online radio station running 24/7 at blackagendaproject.com. Thank you, beloved. I'm back on next week, Wednesday, every Wednesday at this time, live on Facebook. May Almighty God, Allah, continue to bless you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.